Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is Jim Mott. Mott is a landscape painter and creator of the Itinerant Artist Project, in which he has been traveling throughout the U.S., exchanging artwork for hospitality since 2000. Mott was educated at the University of Michigan School of Art and Dartmouth College in New Hampshire. His work has appeared in many galleries and art spaces, including the High Falls and Mercer Galleries in Rochester, New York, the Taylor and Edwards Galleries in New Hampshire, and he has been the artist in residence at Ithaca State of the Art Gallery this summer, and his work will be on display there through October 2nd. And welcome to the show, Jim.
Thank you, Tish.
Now, you say in your artist profile that you paint and draw in response to the visual environment, urban, suburban, rural, and natural landscapes. What attracted you to these unpeopled worlds?
Well, they're often peopled worlds, but when I paint them, the people are usually absent.
Uh-huh.
Landscape has the ability to be a fairly abstract subject, and so I can find images that express some sort of internal poetry sometimes, even though they also look like recognizable subjects, things that we see every day.
Uh-huh.
And I tend to go toward just the everyday. I don't try to get anything too dramatic.
Uh-huh. So you're searching for the poetry in the everyday.
Yeah.
And you're succeeding.
Oh, thank you.
Your paintings are really beautiful. And it is everyday stuff. You do freeway overpasses and just things that you'd see on the streets, and you make it so beautiful.
Well, thank you very much. And when I'm doing the Itinerant Artist Project, I'm staying with volunteer hosts around the country. And I typically paint what's right around their house. I might go for a drive and see some famous site or something especially scenic, but usually it's something like the back shed or a view from the window or the porch.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I'm gonna have you talk more about that project. Now, did you begin creating art as a child? Did this whole thing start when you were a kid, or did you have to wait till you were a little older?
I think, well, everybody draws and paints when they're young, and then I just kept going. And it was mostly, I think, an interest in nature and wanting to connect with it. So if I drew a bird, I felt like I was connecting with the bird or a tree. And it was good incentive to keep going because I had this sort of rapport with things through drawing. And also I noticed that art let me connect with other people in a way that regular conversation or interactions wouldn't let me connect.
Really? So you'd make paintings and that would start up conversations or friendships with kids?
Or you could just, well, more adults, and you could see that they were getting something out of it, and it was a more intimate connection than you could get, or that I could get through just regular being there.
Uh-huh. And were you encouraged when you were starting to do these little drawings from nature and stuff? Were teachers and your family noticing that you had talent?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah? And so you got some encouragement that way?
Yeah, so what gets reinforced gets continued.
You know what I also want to know? How do you go about your paintings? You paint landscapes, obviously. Do you paint them out live in the open, or do you take photographs? How do you deal with that?
A whole combination of those.
Tell us.
Well, for my project, I do these. They're all small panel oil paintings. At home, I sometimes do larger canvases. And I do plein air work on site.
Mm-hmm.
I also work from sketches or from photographs, sometimes from memory. A whole combination. I don't make a fetish out of just doing plein air or anything like that.
I've talked to quite a few painters who say they don't want to use photographs because they feel like they lose the authenticity of the moments passing.
You can, and if you rely on a photograph for a painting, it's really easy to be copying the photograph instead of interacting with the subject. And I think I've painted enough from life that I can use a photograph now and get the best of it.
Yeah. You do seem to be able to find a lot of emotion coming out of the landscape.
I
would think being out there in the setting would help with that.
That is best. And it's sort of a dialogue with what's out there, a dialogue with the paint also. And so when the paint and the subject matter and I are interacting in a lively way, then the painting comes out best. And that usually works best if I'm working from life.
I often wonder what artists are looking for. When you're wandering around in a setting, are you carrying your paints with you, hoping to find something, or do you find something and go back the next day when you think there's going to be perfect light? How do you deal with that?
Ooh. Well, I often go with my paints, but they can be cumbersome, so I might go with my camera instead. If I see something good, I'll make a trip home and get my stuff and go back and paint right away, usually.
Uh-huh. And what are you attracted to when you see something you want to paint? Is it the light, the emotions that it invokes, the shadows? What is it?
It can be any combination of things, and I couldn't define what it is exactly in any particular case. I think it's usually a response inside, a strong emotional response. Something looks beautiful or interesting, and I want to learn more about it, or I want to record it. Uh-huh. Or it looks like a good starting point for a painting.
Did you ever get stuck outside and the light is changing so fast that you feel like you have to paint really fast?
Oh, yeah.
How do you deal with the changing light in the open air?
Paint really fast, and sometimes the fast paintings go better because then your instinct and intuition are working a lot faster than your mind and your reflexes, which can be more intelligent than the analytical mind.
Yeah.
But often I'll take a photograph too. Sometimes I'll start a painting in the field, also take a photograph, and then go back and finish it.
Your paintings remind me of the expressionists, you know, the abstract expressionists, but there's also a realism to some of your work. Who have you been influenced by?
That's very perceptive. When I was very young, at 5 or 6, I remember having this art book lying around the house from the Metropolitan Museum, and the images that I was most drawn to at the time were Andrew Wyeth and Franz Kline, the abstract expressionist.
Uh-huh.
And maybe Mark Rothko also. And I didn't really understand them. I felt very drawn to those. And in my later life, as I became a painter, I tried to integrate the concerns of realism and abstract expressionism.
Yeah, and that's exactly what's coming forth in your paintings. Yeah. Some of your paintings remind me of Monet, though, because it almost seems like if you get further back, you see the images up closer. You know, like with Monet's, sometimes it just looks like strokes until you move back and you can see that it's water lilies, for instance.
Yes, exactly. Yes, well, usually with my work, you can, from a distance, it looks almost photographic, and then up close, it looks like a play of paint, and that's what I'm trying for.
It almost feels like it's washed out some of it, like almost like watercolors.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, almost like watercolors. I sometimes paint very thinly with the oils. I use colored ground and let that work as part of the painting.
Uh-huh. Are you influenced by Edward Hopper, too? I sense a little bit, especially your subject matter, because Edward Hopper doesn't do people very often.
Right. Well, he does them more than I do. I feel like I'm a kindred spirit, but I developed my work before I knew much about his work.
Uh-huh.
But people see lonely suburban scenes and lonely urban scenes and think of Edward Hopper. He's staked out the territory.
Yeah. Well, a lot of your scenes are both lonely and haunting to me, which is obviously a Hopper flavor to a lot of us, that haunting feeling that you get out of landscapes.
Mm. Well, I think, I don't want to sound pretentious. I've never thought of myself as especially good painter, but I've thought of myself as a sort of philosophical poet with paint. And I don't think about philosophy as I'm painting, but I think it comes through in the results.
Oh, it does. It does. It's like you are invoking some kind of philosophy, indeed, with some of your work. Now let's talk about your itinerant artist project. This fascinates me. You seem like kind of a shy guy. A lot of painters don't really want to be around a lot of people. How did you come up with this project, and tell us about it?
Well, it's a pretty complex answer. But I started to come up with the idea about 15 years ago when I was living in Ithaca. It just happened that a lot of influences came together at that time. I was dissatisfied with the way the gallery system was working.
In what way? Too cutthroat?
Cutthroat. It seemed impersonal. I often wasn't allowed to meet the people who bought the paintings.
Wow.
I'd work hard in isolation, and then maybe once or twice a year, or once every couple of years, have an opening and meet 50 people. And I wasn't getting the kind of interaction with the public that I wanted. And I read this book, it's 1996, I think, called The Gift by Lewis Hyde. And it's a book about gift exchange in folk stories and myth and other cultures. And nothing I hadn't really thought about, but he articulated it in a way that really fired me up, and I realized that we live in a market capitalist system, which is fine, that's what we have, and we have to earn money, but I thought maybe part of the year I could operate in a gift economy.
Ah.
So I set up this project to be a little microculture in which things work by gift, and I stay with people, they give me food and shelter and friendship, and I give them a painting at the end. I also do several for myself.
Uh-huh. How did you start this? Did you put an ad in the paper and say, who will host an artist, and in exchange I'll give you a painting? How'd you start it?
Well, I came up with the idea. It took me 3 years to get up the nerve to do it, because everything in it is against my nature. Traveling, staying with strangers, trying to sleep in new places, and even painting. I find painting very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
I think some of the emotion that comes through in it is from the struggle to paint. So I decided to set up the project, and I took out an ad in The Nation, and I sent out email chain letters. And this was the year 2000
uh-huh.
when I started. And I don't do this all year long. I do it 1 month a year, roughly. For the first tour, I got 60 or 70 responses in a month from all around the country.
Wow. Were you amazed?
I was. Yeah, I usually put things off to the last minute, so I was hoping that within a month I'd get enough people to make a tour. And I chose about 35 of them and strung together a tour out to the West Coast and back and did it in about 2.5 months.
Wow. So tell us what you learned, and how was this experience at first? Were you scared?
It was extremely daunting, but also exciting. There's something liberating about stepping out of regular life, going away from expectations and conventions, and being open to whatever happens.
Uh-huh.
It's energizing in a way. It was also very difficult. I got really sleep deprived, really worn out, and I didn't think I was painting well, so that was discouraging. However, after about a month, things started to pick up, the paintings got better, and I started to get fired up, you know, meeting people and having someone every day who was interested in what I was doing. That's one of the great rewards of it. I feel very privileged, unlike most painters that I know. When I'm on tour, I have maybe a whole family that's wondering what I'm going to do, and they're excited to see the results every day. And that fueled me.
I would think somebody who does an art like that would be drained by having to meet all these new people and expend so much energy getting to know people. How did you deal with that? Do you need solitude when you paint?
I do. I need a lot of solitude, but the drives in between stops were usually about 8 or 10 hours, so I had some solitude then.
Do you let the people watch you while you're painting?
Sometimes. Sometimes it's better if they don't. I can get more involved in the process.
Uh-huh. You said you ended up having an ongoing painterly dialogue with the American landscape, which I absolutely loved. Tell us what you learned about the American landscape. Were you surprised by some of the emotions that you would invoke in some of these strange places through your canvas?
I was. The purpose of the trip was never to travel. It was to have this interaction with the people who got my paintings and to have this gift economy going. And it just happened that people were all over the country. I really didn't want to see the country on my first trip. It was a necessary evil.
So you'd step on it when you'd go from place to place? You didn't really want to see the landscape?
Well, I ended up wanting to see it. I was reluctant to travel back in those days. But I found, I've seen lots of places I never would have seen, dozens. And often they're very, very beautiful, very exciting, and some places I go back to now. But you never know where the surprising sight is going to be or what it's going to be. It might be just a shadow on someone's garage, or it might be the snow-capped mountains out behind the garage.
Now, you don't exchange any money during these tours, right? How do you live?
Well, you mean during the tours?
Yeah.
I use money for gas, and I try not to use it for anything else. And on some recent tours, I've actually tried bartering for things like a meal on the road or museum admission. I even got a speeding ticket and I traded some paint. I offered to trade a painting for the speeding ticket and the judge said, why not?
I saw that on your website. I could not believe that. That is great.
Yeah, I think it might be the only time it's happened.
I think you've turned quite gutsy.
I'm always trying to push myself and see what I can do that's different.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Jim Mott. He's a landscape painter. And are you trying to make people think about art in a new way of thinking about community by doing these tours? To tell us more about the philosophy behind how you're trying to affect some of these communities, if at all.
When I'm visiting a place, I usually just meet the people I'm staying with and maybe some of their friends. So there are a couple of answers to that.
Mm-hmm.
One is that when I started the project, I was noticing that life was getting more insulated and isolated for people. People were retreating to their homes and their TVs. And that was bothering me, but then I realized I was already doing that. Not television, but I was living a fairly reclusive life. So I thought I couldn't blame other people for abandoning their civic responsibilities if I was doing the same. So I thought I should challenge myself to do something different. It's about affirming community spirit through stretching past my comfort zone and getting out and meeting people. So I do that, and then people hear about it. But I also try to, through the media, if I can, let people know about the project so it might maybe inspire someone to do something similar or just to go and meet the neighbor next door.
Have you gotten other artists to take on this kind of a project? It sounds like a fascinating project to me that almost anybody in any art could probably take on.
I think anyone could. And people have been doing things like this for centuries. It's just that I turned it into a project so that I could focus attention on it.
Yeah, it's amazing to me that you can do that in this day and age when everybody seems afraid of strangers. And have you had any experiences that have frightened you or met people that really didn't have great intentions?
No, never people without great intentions. I email back and forth for a while with anyone who's going to host me, and I get to know them. There have been times when I've been so tired that I've developed a little bit of paranoia. There was one time in California when I was convinced for about half an hour that I was about to be killed by my hosts. But it was total exhaustion.
That's amazing.
It passed and I felt fine. They were great people. And I've also stayed with people who, often they say, their neighbors said, how do you know he's not an axe murderer? And that's just absurd, but people think that way.
Well, I mean, it happens. A lot of people try to date people through these internet services, and there have been some bad experiences for people and murders, so I can understand why you'd have to be careful in this day and age.
Well, yes.
How long do you stay in these places, and how many paintings do you usually generate?
I usually stay 2 to 4 nights, and at first I was doing about a painting a day. And they're small paintings, about 6 by 9 inches. And lately, for this latest tour, I was doing about 3 or 4 a day. It just depends, but it's pretty draining.
I'll bet. Now, are you ever reluctant to give up some of these paintings?
Oh, very.
It sounds like you're probably doing some good work out there.
Yeah, I get pretty attached to my own work. It is hard to give it up, but I found it's easier to give a painting to someone who's made a nice meal for me than to sell it for $500. I don't know why.
Really?
I'd rather have the money.
It feels better, huh?
It does. It feels more natural. And I wouldn't have done the paintings without being part of these people's lives. So my hosts really are collaborators, and they deserve something.
Are you somebody who's reluctant as an artist to be making a living as an artist? Is the business aspect of art something that's incredibly difficult for you?
It's difficult, yes. I don't mind earning money from art at all, but it's hard to arrange that.
Uh-huh. And I've talked to a lot of artists. This is an era when you really have to learn how to talk about your art. Artists didn't have to used to do that in the old days. And also sell your art yourself. It's a whole other part of the art that you have to learn.
Yeah, there were years before I did the project when I was spending most of my time just contacting galleries and sending out resumes and applying for grants and trying to get publicity for shows. And it's incredibly distracting. And it's too bad that artists have to do that. And the ones who rise to the top are the ones who are best at promotion and not necessarily best at art.
Well, I would say that too. Absolutely. Does that distract you from your work, though, to have to deal with looking up galleries? I mean, in other words, would you be painting even if you weren't selling stuff? Is it always the goal to sell and get attention, or are you painting for yourself most of the time?
I was brought up in a family with a long line of community service, and so I was brought up to see art as community service, and it's hard for me to think of doing art that isn't going to reach people. That's led me toward more accessible landscape painting rather than abstract painting. And I like people to be able to get it right away. I try to do good quality art, but I want it to be easy to get, at least at one level. I do want people to see what I do. Selling it is really secondary.
Mm-hmm. And why is that for you?
Well, I'm motivated more by the connection that I can achieve through the art than by the money.
Uh-huh.
Although increasingly I'm noticing that I should catch up on the money part.
Have you learned anything new about your country while you've gone on these tours?
Yeah, I've learned a lot about the country geographically. And the best thing I've learned about the people of the country is that they may not go to art galleries and buy paintings, but a lot more people than I thought are very interested in art and very curious about the creative process and willing to open up their lives to see what a painter is going to do.
Have you met other painters? Have you been invited to the homes of actually, you know, working painters?
Yes. In fact, the last few years, most of my hosts have been other painters. I don't know why that is.
Really?
They're curious.
I was also wondering, since this is something that you push your life into, it's not just a little vacation, has your painting changed since you started doing this?
Yeah, it hasn't changed a whole lot. I've been able to do paintings faster, and sometimes they get more expressive and more certain freedom to them that I like. But overall, no, I'm painting about the same as I was.
Has it opened up your mind about different landscapes and different places, different ideas that you'd like to pursue?
Well, the project is a little bit separate from my regular studio work. At home, I tend to focus more on things like large night scenes. And that doesn't change. I see certain subjects, maybe California or Montana, that I might want to paint later. But mostly I'm just there in the moment, and then I'm gone. And I amassed this collection of itinerant artist paintings, and I exhibit them, but they're separate a little bit from my regular work.
So you really think of it as separate from your regular work. That's interesting to me.
Yeah.
Does that mean it's a separate technique, too, or is it just a separate thought process?
It's more a separate realm. I mean, anything inevitably feeds into the art process.
Uh-huh.
So I could be highly influenced by something I see in another state or in someone's house. I just keep it in a separate category because the studio paintings, the more developed ones, are based on a long-standing familiarity with certain locations, usually,
uh-huh.
and certain moods that come up. Maybe I might go wandering around at midnight in a place that I know really well. And it's different quality.
Mm-hmm. I also understand that you do commissions. How does that work for you?
Well, someone will have a scene that they want painted, and I'll paint it. And sometimes I try to talk them into how to have it done. Most people imagine a large canvas, and because I'm so used to doing small paintings now, I'll sometimes recommend 3 small paintings of a place they like instead of 1 scene.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. Do you do portraits for commissions when people ask for that?
I'm not especially good at portraits. I have done a couple of dog portraits.
Do you teach at all?
I give workshops now and then.
Uh-huh.
I just did a couple of workshops in Ithaca.
What do you try to do to inspire other artists? What, do you give people tips or from your experiences? How do you inspire?
I tell them about the project because I find the interactions I'm having with other people pretty inspiring. And then I have developed some tips for working fast. And one problem a lot of artists face is how to fit painting into a busy life.
Mm.
So I let them know that it's easy to do a good painting in an hour or two if you're set up for it and if you know a few tricks.
There are a lot of artists and writers and stuff that I've talked to, and they say you have to do it every day. You have to stay in practice. Are you constantly painting, or do you wait for inspiration?
I usually wait for inspiration, but if I'm on the road, I paint every day.
Do you ever go on the road as not an artist?
You know, I've done this project now for 11 years, and it's hard even to visit a friend without having to give them a painting. But I am planning on changing some things. My next project that I'm planning is this fall. I'm planning to go to the Mexican border and just paint. There's a lot of extreme stuff happening there, a lot of political, emotional, cultural violence. And I'm not going to paint that directly, but I thought if I painted the landscape and tried to pick up on that vibe, something interesting might happen. And it won't be an itinerant project. It will just be me traveling the landscape.
Uh-huh. I was going to ask you about that. Do you believe in mixing politics with art?
I think it's possible to do political paintings that are strong paintings. It tends to be that if you have a strong ideal or a strong political belief and you try to paint it, if it hasn't been integrated into your process, then it's going to look like propaganda or illustration or something tacky. The spirit behind it is good, but it's hard to get good art out of that. But if you live it enough, then it can come through. I'm hoping I can do a landscape that is just a landscape, and it will have something political to say.
It says on your website that the singer Ani DiFranco has some of your work in her private collection.
Oh, you
found that. Tell us how that happened.
Well, she's a cousin of mine.
Really?
Yeah. And we used to go to the same summer place together. Not together, but we have cottages we go to.
Uh-huh.
And as she got famous, I stayed in touch. So we get together once a year or so. In the mid-90s, when I was getting the idea for the project, she actually had a strong influence because I had been considering going into another field.
Really?
And decided to switch back to painting. And she suggested that if I wanted to keep painting, I'd have to live with my friends a lot. She just meant it as a way to survive. But I thought of her folk singer model, going place to place.
Ah, the troubadour idea.
The troubadour thing. She would stay with strangers who were supportive, and she'd sing every night and have an audience. And I thought, wouldn't that be neat to do that with painting? So, she had a strong effect.
Huh, I can understand that. Do you think you'll continue to find beauty in ordinary things, or will you ever run out of ideas?
I hope I'll always find beauty in ordinary things. I think life won't be worth living if I don't.
Uh-huh.
But whether I'll always want to paint it, I don't know.
Are you somebody who's worried, like so many people I've talked to, about the fact that we are losing the arts in schools, and what's going to happen to some of the future artists if there aren't any arts left in the education systems?
I think people who want to do it will always do it, but on the other hand, you're right. If sometimes art or music will be what pulls someone through, and to have that discouraged or downplayed or cut out of the curriculum seems terrible. There are a lot of things that are going really bad right now. The environment, mm-hmm. politically, we're in the grip of this government that is, you know, run by the power and the money.
By the corporations,
and it's not going to change very fast. But that everything else is deteriorating so fast now is really alarming.
I would think especially you as a landscape artist would be really worried about what is happening with the environment. Do you think it will push you to maybe do some more politics in your work?
I would like to find ways to lend my work to good causes. You know, I could do tours that somehow focused on the politics. The art, I try to keep the art separate from that or let it be informed subtly. I could do a tour that had a political agenda, uh-huh. and that would not affect how I paint.
Yeah.
But it would maybe promote the cause.
Yeah, I can see something with your paintings showing what we could lose, for instance.
That's a really good idea.
Yeah. Well, you know, we are almost out of time, Jim. Can you tell us about, I know you have an exhibit at the State of the Art Gallery right now, and it goes through, what is it, October 2nd?
I think so.
Tell us what's included in this exhibit.
Well, the State of the Art Gallery, it's a cooperative gallery with about 30 members, and they invited me to be an artist in residence for a couple of weeks and then display the results. I've never had so much pressure. 10 days of painting, and then I put up everything that I did right away, and good or bad.
Some of it's probably not even dry.
It was mostly wet when I hung the show. The overall show is very good. It's a members' show. Mm-hmm. And it looks really nice. And then there's this back wall where 34 of my paintings are sitting in a certain arrangement. And it just shows what I did with a couple of weeks in Ithaca, staying with four or five hosts.
And tell us what you did do. Did you go to some of the most famous tourist spots? Or?
I had originally planned to, but it got so... there was a lot of pressure to get some work done. So I mostly stuck with my usual method of painting what was around the garden or the view of the street. Maybe the view of the street at night, uh-huh. and then once in a while I'd go off somewhere to a good, you know, picturesque area, and try to do something. One of my hosts had a magnificent view of the Cornell campus on the far hill with Cayuga Lake in the background, and so that was easy. Just sat on the porch and painted.
Uh-huh. Well, I find that there's a lot of cute little houses too in Fall Creek and some of the neighborhoods.
Oh yeah, once I got going, it was hard to know where to stop.
Well, we look forward to that. I hope everybody will go see that exhibit. It's at the State of the Art Gallery, we think, through October 2nd or so. So you'll have plenty of time to go see that. Jim, give us some contact information in case people want to get in touch with you, perhaps to host you somewhere.
Oh, thank you. The main way is through my website, which is jimmott.com, JIMMOTT.com. And that has the email address and other contact information.
Okay.
And you can see my portfolio there, too.
Yes, do check out his portfolio. Your paintings are absolutely beautiful. Jim Mott, landscape artist, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Tish.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega, and we are a sponsored project of the New York Foundation for the Arts. Tax-deductible donations are welcome at artspire.org. That's artspire.org. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. I'm Tish Perlman. We'll be back next week.